So now we have Glenn. He's going to talk about his project Rama. And yeah, it looks like it's going to be a really good talk. So give him a welcome, please.
Okay, first of all, does everybody hear me? Yeah? Okay, super. Before we begin, did anybody here already hear about Rama? Or is it the first time? Yeah, one person? That's something. So Rama is made by myself and the company I co-founded. And we mainly built the company to fund our open source work, as most of our work is open source and freely available under MIT licenses, because we believe that there needs to be better software to be easier building network stacks. And we will talk about that in this conversation. So we also have a podcast about networking and Rust. In case you like the subject, I imagine you are, as you are in the Rust track. And the reason I bring it up is because we don't only want to like develop software, we also want to educate people around Rust and networking, because for too many in the software industry, networking is still a mystery. Even if you would write back-end services, you might never have read the protocol RFCs or understand how they work or even make the best use of it possible. So in case you like networking and Rust, I would tell you, you might want to listen to the podcast. And in case you do networking and you want to have a small interview after this conversation, do catch me outside. So we develop Rama. It's on GitHub. It's MIT licensed. And it's a modular service framework to move and transform packets. So we're going to try to unpack that tagline in this talk. So why Rama? That is the first question, because of course it's not like it's the only framework around building network stacks, so why another one? And the honest answer is I wish I wouldn't have to write it, because it's the last 3-4 years there was a lot of time sunken into, but I feel I had no other choice, and I will tell you why. So you can, if you want to build network stacks, either use something that is off the shelf working, so meaning like something like NGINX, or maybe you use MIT and proxy if you build proxies. There are all kind of things, and you might write plugins for them, you might write ways to extend them, but you're always, first of all, it's very implicit. So you don't really know often how the flow is going, what the lifetime of the request is, what you can do, and even though it might give you strong velocity at start because it has a lot for you already, you will quite quickly run into a wall once you build up your service more and more. As you build up new features and the complexity adds up, you will sooner or later start to fight against your own tooling and your velocity will drop. The other choice you have, and that's the one I also choose in the past often, next to having written Nginx before, is you write from scratch. And of course, when I mean writing from scratch, I don't mean you start from nothing. You will probably use some like low-level networking library. If you use Rust, I'm sure there are a couple you can think of. In C, there are other ones. But the problem with that is that each time you do this, be it for a customer or for your own product, you each time again run in very similar issues and bugs. Because while the protocols themselves are very easy, it is very tricky to get them right once you combine them. And once you throw in around 50,000 or 100,000 requests per second on these kind of services, you quite quickly run into all kind of edge cases which you didn't foresee. And I've been doing that for around 8 years or more, and it became very tiring because first of all, you have like a very low velocity at the start, and secondly, you each time, like I said, run in the same issues. The only nice thing about writing from scratch is that you do have the ultimate freedom to do what you want, but the downside is that you're just reinventing the wheel each time. And so what I also like about the ability to write from scratch or that approach, even though I wouldn't recommend it, is that you can write in a way where the flow is very explicit. Because if we go back to the off-the-shelf solutions like NGINX or very similar technologies, to me it is not always clear how a request flows through which middleware, through which plugin, especially once you start to write more and more dynamic plugins in C or whatever, like it's very unclear like how your request flows. And when some weird issues happen in some kind of network stack layer, be it TCP, UDP, in HTTP, doesn't really matter. You really have to scratch your head to find where the issue is. So with Rama, we really wanted to have something that once you read the code, that you write yourself with Rama, that you also understand how the packets flow. So if you look, for example, at an example of such a stack, this is an example of a service stack, which is combining TCP, and on top of that, we use SOX 5 or HTTP, like both proxy protocols would be supported in this stack, and it is also optionally with TLS, and it's like a little proxy that then proxies the either plain text traffic or the encrypted traffic, but it leaves that encrypted. And while it might be a bit daunting at first, the flow is very clear. Like, even though you don't are not an expert in, let's say, the framework, if you take some time to read through it from bottom to up or up to bottom, it will make sense how the flow is. You don't have to guess it. You don't have to look in some documentation. Is it going first via this middleware or via that middleware? Is the ordering like this or like that? You can just read it. But I do understand that it will look a bit daunting, but that's simply the nature of the complexity of network stacks. So we are not, of course, invented in a vacuum. We are built on the shoulders of giants. And we, in our case, we built in the philosophy of towers. And tower itself was built on top of the philosophy of something else. And that means that everything in Rama is basically a service. So you get an input, and you give back an output or an error. And of course, in case you have no error in Rust, you can use something like infallible. That also works. And everything that you want to layer, be it TLS or HTTP or whatever, will just layer on top of each other. And this way, you can combine them like Lego blocks and have the absolute freedom over your network stack. The service trait currently looks like this. If you ever have seen Tower, it will look very similar. So you have to define an output, you have to define an error, and you have to define, of course, the serve function. You don't always have to define this yourself or implement this trait yourself. There are other ways to get the same service, be it with a function or be it as something else, like a static response or something. And then because of how Rust and the state is today, we also need to provide something to provide a box service, because we already use implementation return type for the traits, and that is currently a bit wonky in the Rust state as it is. But we did want to make use of it, and so we were very happy that it shipped as part of the 2024 edition, as we've been following Rust since the very early days, like around 10 years ago. Now, as I said, we didn't invent this service concept. As far as I remember, it was Finagle who first came up with it at Twitter, and maybe even before, but I remember in 2011, they made an announcement that they started using Finagle, which was in Java, if I recall correctly. And then later in Rust, there was the folks of Tower RS. They made Tower. And it looked, I mean, they took a lot of the knowledge from Finagle and made it in a more like Rust way. But Rust of 2016 is very different than Rust is today. Back then, there were no easy ways to do asynchronous code in Rust, and most didn't even attempt to do it. And so you can also see it in how Tower is built. On top of that, they made some choices that we find regrettable, such as the fact that they made it a very conscious choice to add something like poll ready in their service trait, which means even though it's something it's a kind of function that you need in case you want to check if a service is ready. And it might be needed because you want to do load balancing or shedding or whatever, but it's a very niche use case, and there are many ways to do it also, even if you don't have an explicit function. And next to that, in case you want to ever not make the function mutable, it is also a very wonky contract to get right. So we then, in 2018, started to experiment with something called Tower Async, as at that time, in Nightly, all the things that we wanted were available. And that is what you see below the Tower implementation. So we dropped up already, and we started to return futures. And then between 2024 and 2026, we started to develop Rama, after we have done several iterations on our several experiments and MVPs. And that is currently how the trait is today. So we also renamed the request and response to input and output, because in Rama, everything is a service. And so even your TCP service or your UDP service, your TLS service, your SUX5, your HProxy, doesn't really matter. They're all services that you stack on top of each other in a way that you want and in a way that works for your project. So as I said, you can see several examples. For a TCP, it means that you are getting a TCP stream and you just return nothing because you're serving the entire stream. For TLS, you will get some kind of stream. It doesn't have to be TCP. It can also be UDP or whatever kind of stream it is. It just needs to be a stream that gives you bytes. And then HTTP will start from a byte stream, that's your server, but then you also have an HTTP service, which actually deals with the requests. And once you're at that layer, it doesn't really matter anymore if it's HTTP 2 or HTTP 3 or whatever. At that point, it's just a generic kind of request. So if we now go back to the original slides where I showed you an example stack, which you can also find in our examples, and I will talk a bit about the RAM examples later, is that you can see indeed that we have pair kind of protocol, the layers nicely on top of each other. However, and that is the first thing that I noticed, and it might be because some people didn't work a lot with Rust before, but one thing I see a lot is then you get into, and it's not only a RAMA, I also saw it in other communities like in Axiom and in Tower, is that they start to get very huge stacks of generics and they try to label them. So for example, for this stack, that is the entire type. And it's very painful, and in fact, it's only painful because you try to label it. And I would think it's kind of like trying to label every part of your house. Like, you wouldn't do that. You might define some properties of your house, but you're not gonna define every little cranny and hook and detail of your house. So instead, you have to think about what is the actual service doing. And for example, in this case, our stack was a proxy stack, which was man-in-the-middling HTTP traffic, be it TLS encrypted or not. And so we really just want a TCP stream as input, and we want an error in case something really horrible went wrong, or otherwise nothing because we were just finished with serving the stream. And in that way, you have to think in terms of trade bounds, because once you start to do that, then you have two options. Either you have your functions or your structs or whatever, where you take a generic parameter, like a single one, and you just define what you want. Be it, okay, for example, in this case, I want the service which takes an HTTP request, and it returns an HTTP response, and the error needs to be something that's some kind of standard error, or can be turned into that. Or, in case you don't want to deal with generics, because the thing with generics is that they're very leaky, and once you start to introduce them to your struct, for functions it's less of an issue, because you rarely ever have to define them, but for structs they can be leaky, and in case you need to pass them around in several locations, you might instead want to choose for dynamic dispatching. And that's the same thing, because your trade bound still looks the same. The only difference is that you box it, and in our case we didn't box it, we arced it as dynamic dispatch trade. Now, around KISS and simplicity, and also of course and being explicit. This wasn't like a very easy road, and it's still not a road that's finished, far from it. Like, we are now 3 years in development, and I feel, given how many network protocols there are, how many different use cases there are, I might still be doing this for decades to come. So far, we already have more and more companies adopting RAMA, and this tells us a lot about how to improve RAMA and what to add next. Some ideas which we thought of initially as working fine turned out to be too complex or too niche, very similar to how we observed the poll ready function to be too niche of a use case to warrant that kind of complexity. And so I want to give you a couple of examples, because at PlaBio we really want to develop software that works for you and that's not in your way. So here are a couple of examples. If you take a service and you need to have it cloned because you need to pass it through different threads, you could implicitly arc it for the user. And that's something we did at some locations at the start because it made it very easy, or it made sense at that point of time. I don't remember anymore. But as we are cleaning up more and more of these kind of initial choices, I find it a much better choice to ask the service needs to be a service, but it also needs to be clonable. If the user wants to arc it, that's fine. But it needs to be a choice of the user or the choice of the thing the user is using. Similarly, we have the philosophy of everything is a service, but still we had sometimes specialized traits to do something specific. An example of that was the request inspector, and it kind of does what the name does. It is kind of like a service, but it takes a request and it returns a modified request. And it's a very kind of niche use case, but it did work out and it made sense at the time. But again, as we started to clean up our code base and get more and more traction in production, we also wanted things to be simple because there was already sufficiently things to learn. Why introduce more complexity for the user? And so we removed that, and now these things are just, of course, a service because you can just modify a request and leave the response, and it's the same. Another example is something called a context. So initially, the service didn't just take input, but also a kind of context. And the idea behind that was to make statically typed states pass around. But it turns out that it is a very niche use case, and in the only location you really want this is in some kind of server. And so now you can still do these things, and of course you could always do these things because services can be structs, and so you always have the option to make your own struct, implement service trait, and add state to it. But in case you want to have something like a function as your router, in case you write an HTTP stack, then we allow the things in the router to have a state, and we pass them via a trait bound. And then your statically typed state still works, but it is a very niche use case, and it's very located for this kind of use case, and we don't have to leak it through the entire thing. Sometimes you do have dynamic states, and for that we have extensions. So both inputs and outputs can have extensions, and you can think of that for your socket addresses. For dynamic behavior, maybe you want to disable IPv4, maybe you want to override DNS. There are all kind of things that you might want to plug in, and that your middleware, including your own middleware, could react to. That's what extensions are for. And so for now, it's in flux because we are improving it once again. But at the moment, this is having like two traits on the inputs and the outputs, which is like you can take them by reference, take them by a mutable pointer. But in the future, you will only need to do it by reference because we just finished implementing an append-only vector, which allows us to pass only by a single shared reference and don't have to worry about the mutation. But the point being is you can inject any kind of dynamic state into it, and the only unique thing has to be that socket all the way to your final application handling of the response, whatever protocols you go through, they all chain these extensions as they go, and they leave little breadcrumbs as what choices were made and what behavior has to have dynamically be changed. So Rama is a proxy, but it's also not just a proxy framework, because a proxy is a server and a client. And so what I mean with that is, for example, if you look at a client or a server in HTTP, and I mostly use HTTP here because it's the protocol most people are familiar with, but we of course know just about HTTP. But if we continue to think in HTTP, you can see that the client and a server, they are pretty much the same signature. You take a request and you return a response. And that is a very powerful concept once you get your head around it, because it kind of means that we can make any service like very highly level by having a trait, an extension trait. And it's also another concept we invented. An extension trait is basically you implement it for some very generic bound, be it like any service, and you give it some kind of capabilities. And this allows us, like in the left you can see, to easily make a request. And this works on any service, meaning even if you want to test your web server, you can just treat it in your test as if it's a client, because everything is really just a service. So Rama is a bunch of crates, and it's only growing. But for users that use Rama, they will just use the mono crate, which imports all the other ones behind feature flags. So you have things around crypto, TLS, around HTTP, WebSockets, gRPC, which is built on HTTP. Well, it doesn't have to be, but in most cases it is. You have DNS, you have transport, whatever. So, and this list is growing as the needs of ourselves and the needs of our customers grow. We also have other resources, such as the book. There you can learn more about our philosophies, our patterns. Maybe because you're new to networking, you can also learn about the different kind of proxies you can build. And of course, it's just to give you a taste, because in the end, you kind of can build what yourself. We also have a CLI tool. We also have other things. One example, for example, in the book, you can read about errors and the fact that you can attach context to it, which is something most people would use anyhow for. But in Rama, we have like a mini version of that, which allows you to work with errors without having to add yet another dependency to your list. We also have public services where you can test some HTTP protocol, should you be implementing like a client, or do you want to see how your traffic looks like on TLS, TCP, or HTTP. We also have a fingerprinting service to do emulation of user agents. We have an IP service, and these are all freely available. You can check them out now. We also have a lot of examples, and we add more and more examples. All our examples are also tested, and I don't just mean they compile. We also actually test the behavior for every commit and know that they will work as promised, including documentation on top of the example, etc. Now, Rama has been going on for a long time, and so we are hoping to ship 0.3 somewhere in the next month, but of course that is to be seen. There are a couple of little things that we want to clean up before, but starting from that, we are a bit tired of having the long gaps between the releases and having many alpha versions. So we are now at a point where we are stable enough that we want to start doing regular releases. We will still do maybe sometimes breaking changes, but they will be more frequent instead of building up to a giant release, because if you would still be on 0.2 and you have to then jump to 0.3, it's going to be really painful unless you have the help from us. Our star history grew kind of like around the time that also our framework became more stable, but it's still very small compared to the people that use us. Some people work with us, but others not. For example, OpenAI, they use it also for their codecs. So if you use codecs, then it's like a local network proxy built with Rama. We help fund this work. And of course, sharing is caring. The final thing I want to mention about Rama is we really were tired of reinventing to everybody, which is very different than if everybody makes their own little island. It just doesn't work. And so that's we welcome anybody in the community. We also do mentorship, etc. And so, yeah, I don't think I have time for questions, but otherwise, thank you very much for paying attention to my talk. And if you want to talk to me, you can meet me outside.